We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hi guys, Colm Kelly here, executive producer of RotoViz Radio and co-host of the RotoViz Overtime podcast with Sean Siegel. We are closing in on 200 episodes and it's competition time, but more on that in just a moment. I want to let you know, as a loyal podcast listener, as always, you can save yourself 10% off a RotoViz NFL pass. All you need to do is enter that code RVRadio2021 at checkout on the website or go to rotoviz.com/podcast for more information. You can get all the access to all of the great tools on the site, all of the content. Get yourself ready to win your fantasy championships this upcoming season. I mentioned competition time. Well, now here's the news. 200 episodes coming up here for myself and Sean. We're giving away some RotoViz subscriptions. It's super simple to enter. Just drop a 5-star review for RotoViz Overtime on your favorite podcast app for a chance to win. The top prize is a 3-month subscription and an appearance on a future RotoViz Overtime podcast to get to talk with myself and Sean. Already have a RotoViz subscription? Thank you for that. But don't worry, if you win, we'll add it on to your current subscription. So what are you waiting for? Drop that review today for the RotoViz Overtime podcast. And of course, when you're there, drop a rating for today's show as well that you're listening along to. Thanks as always for being a loyal podcast listener on RotoViz Radio. Enjoy the show.
Brace the tackle, watch out! Burst of speed! Look at this freshman!
Welcome to the home of professional football, Canton, Ohio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the College to Canton podcast, the perfect show for any and every college football and NFL fan. I'm your host, Travis May, and you can find me on Twitter at @FF_TravisM and at @TitanTravis on Clubhouse. If you're joining us for the first time, College to Canton is a show about the journey of the best football players and prospects from being a college football recruit all the way to the Pro Football Hall of Fame and whether they should be in there or not. We always talk about some fantasy football since this is a RotoViz radio podcast, but we also make sure to dive into some real college football and NFL analysis too. And in case you missed it, the NFL draft is finally here. Not that anyone is actually talking about that, but all the arguing over Justin Fields, over Mac Jones, over Trey Lance, and you know, virtually every other draft position debate is about to come to an end, thankfully. And every year, after we find out how the NFL values our favorite players, it's easy to overreact and, you know, completely shuffle around our boards based on landing spot or based on their final draft capital and really completely change our fantasy football draft boards based on just one weekend. And sometimes that makes sense to do. I mean, like sometimes there's crazy new information we have to digest, but most of the time we as a football nerd community overreact and in a way kind of double count draft capital in our analysis, which if you don't know what that means, I'll get more into that in a second. But more than anything with this episode, whether you're listening before or after the NFL draft, It should help you properly read and react to the actual draft capital of your favorite or least favorite prospects correctly. So to help me dive into this, break this down, I'm actually joined by a buddy of mine, Mike Tagliere at Mike Tagliere NFL on Twitter. He is the lead NFL writer and analyst for Fantasy Pros and the co-host of the Fantasy Pros. Oh, man. Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. He is also, you know, I didn't notice this. I was actually looking at your bio, Mike. You're a top six ranker in the Fantasy Pros Accuracy Contest, and I'm assuming you didn't, like, stack the odds in your favor, did you?
No, I wish they did, though. I mean, it'd be nice if Fantasy Pros would throw me a bone, but no, they make me earn it.
A little home cooking? You
know, it's been a couple of years, unfortunately. Like, this past year, I think I finished number 18. So I was happy with the finish because we keep adding more and more analysts to the mix, and it's like I think we're over 150 now. So wow. A lot of sharp guys in there. So it's really difficult to finish up there. So I'm proud of finishing top six a couple times.
Yeah, man. As we were talking about this yesterday, it's been cool to just see the growth of Fantasy Pros in general, just as a brand and as a go-to for so many in the fantasy football community. Whether you're just getting into fantasy football for the first time or you've been around forever, you know Fantasy Pros. I mean, it's just really cool to see that grow and all the experts that get involved and really the industry as a whole continuing to grow. It's just been a lot of fun. And it's cool just to see you a part of that and having so much success there, having some fun, some great guys that you're adding to your team in the last year or so. I love Kyle Yates and like the whole crew. I met Joe, you know, with you and him on the podcast doing some NFL draft stuff this year. Just been a lot of fun. So thanks for letting me be a part of that process, talking some rookies with you guys every single year.
Oh, no, it's fun, man. I mean, I just love being able to talk to so many different people. I think that's one of the cool things about our podcast is that, you know, it's not just our opinions because, right, you know, we can have a show like that. But at the same time, when you bring in other people, it just brings up different opinions that you may not have heard because in our industry, it's really difficult to listen to a million different podcasts while trying to get your work done and actually develop some sort of opinion for yourself. So I definitely enjoy the podcast, having guys like yourself on.
Oh, yeah. It can easily become an echo chamber and we can run in circles and argue about the same thing a thousand different ways and say the same exact thing, essentially. But one of those areas that I'm seeing over and over and over that I think we probably have to get to is Justin Fields. And like, you know, the fact that there's all this noise back and forth. He's going to be the pick. He's going to the 49ers. And then, oh, you know, he's completely out of the discussion. And oh, it's down to Mac Jones and Trey Lance. And there's so many different conflicting opinions. All the betting lines are going up and down and back and forth in the same set of, you know, 24 hours just completely changing. And obviously this debate is going to be ended here soon as to who is actually going to be the third quarterback off the board. But it looks like it's going to be Trevor Lawrence first going to the Jaguars and Zach Wilson going second to the Jets. And I know you and I have talked about this. I know you even talked about it on your own podcast, but I would love to hear why Justin Fields should be the quarterback too in this draft from somebody who is not myself.
I just don't understand where the hate came from for Justin Fields. I mean, you go back a couple months ago and people were talking about Justin Fields competing with Trevor Lawrence for the number one pick. And then all of a sudden things just fall apart. And I don't really understand where it happened. I don't know where all the love for Zach Wilson came. When I started scouting this class, I saw Zach Wilson and I was like, you know, there's some good things about him. Ultra quick release. You know, he does recognize a defense pretty quickly. I think his accuracy is overrated. I think so many people attribute him have accuracy, but I think it comes down to the level of competition that he played at BYU. When you start thinking about level of competition, that stuff matters. It just makes you look better. If I go play basketball with a bunch of 10-year-olds, I'm going to look like a stud. If I play with a bunch of guys my age, I'm going to look like an idiot just because I don't play basketball all that often. So it's just like you have to take the competition into consideration. Whereas Justin Fields at Ohio State, you know, there's obviously, you know, he has a path to success there, but at the same time, it's all about the tools they have. You know, Zach Wilson's got a big arm. Justin Fields also has a big arm. I would say Justin Fields is dead nuts accurate. The only thing that Justin Fields, you know, like his accuracy reminds me a lot of Russell Wilson when you look downfield. But the reason that he's not Russell Wilson is because once he takes a little bit of heat in the pocket, he becomes a runner. Yeah. Whereas someone like Russell Wilson, why he's so special is because he can become a runner, but he more keeps his eyes down the field the entire time while evading that pressure. And then you'll see Justin Fields sometimes have a little tunnel vision where, you know, I'm from Chicago, moved to Tennessee recently where I got to watch Jay Cutler for a long time. Cutler had all the physical tools, but when it came to tunnel vision a little bit, sometimes he would miss that floating safety coming over. And it's not that he wasn't accurate. It was just that he didn't see that guy. And then he came across and it was an easy interception. So that's the things, those are the negatives to Justin Fields, but what he has, arm strength, accuracy, mobility, you can't teach a lot of those things. And while Zach Wilson has a lot of similar tools, I would rather take Justin Fields because he did it on a much longer, a bigger sample size, and he did it against better competition than Zach Wilson. So would I be shocked if Justin Fields goes number two overall on Thursday night? I tweeted it out today. I would love to watch the draft world burn because we're all going to be wrong. And sometimes we have to just like take a step back and say, hey, we knew we were going to be wrong. Let's enjoy it for what it is, because the Jets really haven't said anything. They haven't come forward and said, yep, we're taking Zach Wilson. It's just been assumed that they're taking Wilson, and we expect them to. And the draft for most people starts at 3, but you can bet your bottom dollar that I will be paying attention when that pick number 2 is made.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned a lot of things about Zach Wilson. I'm concerned. He basically looked, well, frankly, awful just a year prior, and then just magically, you know, faces a barely top 100 defensive schedule and looks amazing. That's great. But it's crazy to me that it's just consensus that Justin Fields is not only not the second best quarterback, but dropping below guys like Mac Jones, dropping below guys like Trey Lance. So, I mean, if you had to, you know, just say, hey, this is where Justin Fields is getting drafted, where would you say he gets drafted this Thursday?
I mean, my final mock draft, I came out with it. It came out earlier today, and I put him to the Denver Broncos. I had them switching spots with the Lions at 7, just moving up 2 spots to get him, because I think you're going to start getting into the territory. Because once you fall to that territory, it shouldn't be too hard for a team like the Patriots, like Washington, like the Bears to maybe try and trade up at that point. Because what San Francisco did when they made that trade, you know, over a month ago now, is they reset the trade market, and it's going to be impossible for teams to trade up into there because of how much they gave up. Teams just don't have that equity available. So you're going to be looking, if Justin Fields falls, if Mac Jones, if Trey Lance, if those guys fall, you're going to look for teams like the Bears, like Washington, to potentially trade up, because it's going to be a much smaller price to pay. And it just, if the 49ers take Mac Jones there, I swear it's going to look and it's not to say that Mac Jones can't be good with Kyle Shanahan. Let me be clear. Kyle Shanahan is an offensive mind, and I believe that he's going to make most quarterbacks look better than they rightfully are. It's kind of like Sean McVay did with Jared Goff for a long time. And then, you know, the wheels kind of fell off there. Mac Jones can be competent under Kyle Shanahan, and he might make some people look foolish for making fun of Mac Jones. Yeah. I don't like Mac Jones. And I don't think you trade up to number 3 to take a quarterback like Mac Jones when he was projected to fall into the teens. Now, if you wanted to trade up with a team like Detroit at number 7, we obviously know Detroit, they need some more picks. They need to rebuild that roster. No big deal. You could trade up to 7. You could trade up to number 6. They were able to do that because when that trade was made, Philadelphia was clearly willing to trade out of that number 6 spot. So, because obviously Philly, they flipped back to 12 with the Dolphins. Yeah. So they were willing to move. So 6 and 7, you could have gotten Mac Jones there.
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. I mean, it's been interesting just because if you look at the competition questions that Zach Wilson and Trey Lance have, and then the difference in mobility between Mac Jones and Justin Fields, and just looks like the obvious answer is Justin Fields. He has every question you might ask about the guys that are in contention for that third pick or even the second slot with Zach Wilson. It feels like Justin Fields should win that argument, but he doesn't for a lot of people, apparently, or at least one NFL team. Or 2 NFL teams. But is there any, I guess, any slot or any of these top 5 quarterbacks could drop where you would, you know, begin to adjust your rankings outside of, you know, just differences in the landing spot?
No, I mean, when you look at the teams that are potentially there to take them, you look at Denver, obviously, the surrounding cast there. I think there's a reason that we're kind of secretly inside rooting for someone like Justin Fields to go to Denver, because Jerry Jeudy's phenomenal. Cortland Sutton coming back. You have Noah Fant. Like, that team has, like, crazy amounts of skill. They have a decent offensive line in place. So I would love to see Justin Fields go to Denver. You know, but you look at the other teams that are potential there. Washington, they have a few good skill position players. We know that Scott Turner he's not shied away from throwing the ball, even with bad quarterbacks. Yeah, so I would love that landing spot. Chicago is one that I might downgrade him a little bit, like a quarterback, if they were to get a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance, because I've lost all faith in Matt Nagy. And again, this is someone that moved from Illinois. So Matt Nagy, when he went to the Bears,
you're a little sick excited. Of it.
I was excited about Matt Nagy coming to the Bears because Andy Reid had said a lot of good things, saying he's the most ready, you know, assistant that I've ever had, blah, blah, blah. And he did fine his first year. And I had a friend of mine was telling me, he's like, I think there's a lot of trickery and I think teams are going to catch up. And Nagy just became predictable. And he basically, anytime that once he got Cordarrelle Patterson on his team, it went to crap. Cordarrelle Patterson came on the field. You knew exactly what was coming.
Yep.
Trading up to get Anthony Miller and not utilizing him to his strengths. Anthony Miller is a good NFL wide receiver. They just don't want to use him in that way. You know, Mike Davis, having him on board, cutting him, drafting David Montgomery. There is so much I can get into with this whole Bears regime and what is wrong with them. But what I will say is that I've lost faith in Matt Nagy as a play caller, and I worry about that. So, but here's the thing. If the play calling goes awry again, and if they have another, you know, sub 500 season, because there is no more 500 season, you know, it's 7-10 now.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah, whatever it is there. Yeah. With that extra game. Right. So what you're saying is you're not betting on Andy Dalton, and you're not betting on Matt Nagy to ride the ship for the Bears. So hopefully no quarterback drops that far, I guess.
Right. And if he does fall there, I don't think he's falling there. I think the Bears would have to trade up to get him. And I don't even know if Ryan Pace has the ability to trade up right now. I think he'd have to get everything okayed through Bears ownership because he's on the hot seat. So, you know, but again, it's if Matt Nagy struggles again, that's only 1 year. So I'm not going to dock those quarterbacks too much because that means they're going to have another head coach coming in. It's just another unknown. So I would dock him a little bit, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Justin Fields, back to him real quick. I mean, he's got the, like, right now, according to one of my favorite tools in all of the industry, it's called Grinding the Mocks. It's a tool that it's put together by Benjamin Robinson every single year. It's been one of the best tools out there. It's just projecting expected draft position. He essentially built this tool where you can find it at grindingthemocks.shinyapps.io. Seriously, or you could just Google Grinding the Mocks. That'd be easier than remembering what I just said. But essentially, he pulls mock drafts from all around the internet, scrapes all this data from literally thousands of data points, because over the past few months, there have been mock drafts on mock drafts on mock drafts, and pulls all this information to give us these expected outcomes of where all of our favorite players could be taken. And so right now, based on the recent mocks and based on thousands of data points, Justin Fields, his expected draft position is 6. So you had him at 7. You know, it looks like that would be, you know, some kind of trade up situation. And most sports books have him around 7.5 right now as well for Justin Fields. So it looks like he's probably not dropping below that point. And I doubt really any of these guys drop past pick 10 because of, well, generally just how the consensus is viewed on all these guys. If you look at the Grinding the Mocks tool, there are 5 quarterbacks in the top 7 overall right now. Like, that is just crazy to me, looking at all the hundreds and thousands of data points that we have on all these guys, and the consensus just being that all 5 of these guys are worth a top 10 NFL draft pick. Let's move on to the mention I said it earlier, just kind of in passing, but this idea of double counting draft capital. And what I mean by that is, in a way, it's kind of confirmation bias in one way or the other. Like, take, for instance, we have an expected outcome. We're expecting player A to be drafted in round 1, and then he's drafted in round 1, and then we're like, see, I was right. And then we move him up our draft board, even though nothing really happened other than what we already expected. Or say a guy misses out on day 2 draft capital, and he was on the fringe of being a day 2 guy anyway. And we move him way down our draft boards because, oh, see, I was right. He's not good enough. The NFL doesn't like him. And that can lead to all sorts of overreactions in how we rank these rookie players and how we kind of project their short-term and even long-term NFL futures. And so I think we have to work consciously and intentionally to make sure we're not overreacting to when a player meets our expectations at their expected draft position. And so I'm going to be alluding to that tool, that Grinding the Mocks tool, because it basically is the best tool out there to give us an idea of where the consensus currently is on these players. And diving first into the top 3 consensus wide receivers, you know, guys that are almost locks to get first round draft capital at the wide receiver position. Ja'Marr Chase, expected to be drafted around pick 4. Devontae Smith, pick 9. And Jalen Waddle, pick 12. These guys have been really for a very long time. We knew they were going to be drafted probably in the first round. So I'm going to have to be careful not to overreact when I see Ja'Marr Chase get drafted and he's paired up with Joe Burrow you know, for a college LSU reunion. But really, like, that's just one of the most commonly expected outcomes. And so I've got to know, okay, he's my wide receiver one, but I'm not going to create this new tier just because he just landed in the exact same spot that I thought he would. Like, do you ever find yourself struggling to do that, like, with especially with players you're especially passionate about, Mike?
Yeah, no, there's players like last year, Donovan Peoples-Jones was someone I liked. And, you know, when it can go vice versa too. It can go both ways with this double counting in terms of, like, you know, when you, it's confirmation, like, oh, I knew Jalen Waddle was going to go this high. Well, if he goes to Detroit, Jared Goff is, he can't throw the deep ball. So that's really going to hurt Jalen Waddle's projection.
Exactly.
So that's a team that I would move him down a little bit, even though he was valued properly because Jalen Waddle is going to be a star. But it goes the other, it goes the other way too, though, because, like, you look at someone like N'Keal Harry, for example, you know, the Patriots, you go back to that year. I was not high on N'Keal Harry in that draft class. I didn't like him, but a lot of people did. They had him as their wide receiver one. And they, and then he goes to the Patriots and everybody's like, oh, there it is. I did bump him up because he was drafted in the first round. Yeah. However, I wasn't willing to go all in because obviously I wasn't high on him. Whereas everybody else used that a reason to bump him up again. Oh, now he gets to go play with Tom Brady. Where in reality, Tom Brady, he's not a guy that threw in a tight separation very often. You know, he didn't trust N'Keal Harry, and N'Keal Harry wasn't even on the field very much when he was there. So it can go both ways. You do have to adjust though. As an analyst, it's like, just because I like a player, it doesn't mean a team likes a player. And if a player that I like, for example, falls, you know, into the fifth or sixth round as a wide receiver, it's like, I have to lower my expectations because it's very rare for a wide receiver that's drafted in the fifth or the sixth round to get playing opportunity without tons of injuries in front of him or just being a complete outlier, because that stuff just rarely happens. Like Donovan Peoples-Jones played really well for the Browns last year, but how many injuries did it take for him to actually get on the field and make those a few splash plays, you know what I mean?
True.
So that's the thing, is like, you have to adjust. Draft equity does matter. Based on studies I've done, I do it every year. I look at production based on the round you were drafted in. And wide receivers, it seems like if you're drafted in the first or second round, it's relatively it's very similar in terms of the opportunity you get right out of the gate. But once you get into that third and fourth round, it's like opportunity goes down. It's like sixth, seventh, you're just like, oof. I mean, you just want that guy to make a roster at that point, and you're just hoping that he gets a chance to shine because it's just rare for those guys to happen. And when they do, people are going to be shouting from the rooftop, say, I told you, I told you. But in reality, they're missing all those players that they talked about that didn't really work out. So exactly. It's just understanding that stuff. And I love how you brought it up, just because people will use that as confirmation bias, but you have to factor in where a player goes in the draft. And you have to, you know, if a player was drafted to a team that was, you know, Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones, you know, they draft a third wide receiver. Let's say they drafted Jamar Chase just for, you know, just for fun.
Just for kicks.
It's not, yeah. His value out of the gate is not going to be very good just because he's really the third option on that team. Whereas if you go to a team, you know, like let's say Philadelphia, that team is lacking a number one wide receiver. So you do have to factor that in and I know you're more Devy Dynasty type stuff where it's like that's 1 year. So you don't really want to put too much emphasis on that, but it really comes down to whether or not your team is rebuilding. Is your team competing? How much should you be willing to trade to move up to grab that player because you're expecting him to produce right away? All that stuff matters. It's very small differences, but in the end, you know, talent is talent, and most of the time it's going to shine.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, what's funny though, it's just so funny how it does so much come down to the opportunity thing. So yes, it's awesome. Oh, great. This player got first round capital. See, everyone, I was right. But it has to do with the nuance and the opportunity. And one of the greats, one of the founders actually of rotoviz.com, Frank, he used to talk about how talent, you know, at this level, at the NFL level, being far flatter than we actually pretend that it is. And that most of like what we see and like what we think is talent is actually just opportunity. And so no matter how passionate I am about a said player that lands in a spot that might lead to some opportunity in round four, historically speaking, I probably shouldn't rank them above like a round one running back or even, you know, like early round two wide receiver at the same position. Like, we have to look at historical trends, and you know, I mean, at RotoViz, we care about data. We care about historical trends, historical hit rates, and predictive analytics. And so The draft really matters. And if you want to try to build any kind of model to help predict future NFL outcomes, like draft capital, for the most part, predicts more than, you know, 99% of any kind of model that somebody wants to build just by itself.
Yep.
And so that's what makes it so confusing, because when there are guys that are picked, you know, right next to each other, back to back to back, what do you do? And so I think that's going to be an interesting situation when we look at the running backs this year. Sorting through the top three big names like Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams. Right now, the expected draft position, according to the Grinding the Mocks, thousands of mock drafts and recent mock drafts, Najee Harris is slotted with an expected draft position around pick 23, Travis Etienne around pick 33, and Javonte Williams around pick 42. Albeit just in the past few days, the gap is narrowing and narrowing and narrowing between those three. It could even be that we see them just go 1, 2, 3 back to back to back. So at what point, I mean, is there any point where, you know, one of them, if one of them drops out, you're ranking them down, or that changes things for you? Or maybe even with Javonte Williams, like if he's actually the first one taken, you know, a la, you know, no one expected this to be the case with, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire like last year. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire leapfrogging some guys who are supposed to go ahead of him. Does that change things for you if they're all picked around, you know, pick 25 to 42?
Yeah, no, I love how you brought up Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because he was actually my number one running back last year. So to see him go in the first, I can tell you, Travis, I was on our live stream and I was celebrating. I was just dancing. It was a good time. And that was that confirmation bias, you know, where it's like, oh, I knew it. I told you guys. Pretty much, yeah. But in reality, you do have to bake that stuff in. And if one of the, will it change ranking if they all go in round two? Not so much. You're going to look at situation. You're going to look at opportunity, the other running backs in the roster. But if a running back goes in the first round, he's getting opportunity out of the gate. Yeah. And the reason that I think it's possible we see multiple running backs go in the first round, nobody wants to say it, but there's so many teams that want to trade out. We've been hearing that nonstop throughout this draft cycle, is that there's so much uncertainty about the players, no combine, no medical exams, no in-person meets. So teams want to trade out. And what's one of the things about running backs that the reason that they go at the end of the first round is because they get that fifth year option with that player. Running backs, we know, are in their prime once they take a step on the NFL field. They're in their prime. They're going to be used. They're going to be abused. And they're rarely going to get a big second contract. Yeah. So when you have a team like the Jets, the Falcons, the Dolphins, who are all there at the top of the second round, the Dolphins have a lot of equity in future year picks, so they can really move up. They can use some of that to move back into the first round to get that fifth year option with one of these running backs like a Najee Harris, like a Travis Etienne. I don't think Javonte Williams is going to get there. You know, we saw one big year out of him, and obviously it was in a timeshare. So do teams worry about that? Do they wonder if he's that timeshare back? Whereas Najee Harris is more like, that dude is like the 20 plus touch back that you're going to use in all three downs. You don't have any concerns about him. That guy reminds me a little bit of Adrian Peterson, and that's a high comp, and I understand that, but I love Najee Harris, and I believe that he should be the first running back. Travis Etienne is built for today's NFL as well. He's a three down back that has improved every step along the way. The receiving doubts he had a couple of years ago, getting better as a receiver. But Javonte Williams, I do think that the 40 yard dash time that he posted his pro day is a bit concerning to NFL teams. And I'm saying that because pro day numbers were so inflated this year. It was stupid. It was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like we knew that was going to happen. We knew that they were going to be inflated numbers when it came to the 40. So when you see a higher number, that should worry you a little bit more. I know he's not a speed back or anything like that. He's more of that power back, but if he goes in the first round, you can bet your bottom dollar, I'm going to move him up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I am too, especially as, I mean, we love seeing guys who declare early. And it's funny that, you know, Najee Harris and Travis Etienne are both fourth year guys. Like they would have been top guys last year, but they chose to stay and, you know, join a ridiculously terrible draft class at running back and say, hey, maybe I'll just bet on myself because looking ahead next year, everyone's bad. And they were right. This is not a great in-depth draft class at the running back position. But it's funny, just analytically speaking, if all three of them sneak into the back end of running of round one, Javonte Williams will have probably the best historical comps of the three. But yeah, it is interesting just to see him check in a little bit lighter and a little bit slower than you want to see a guy at the pro day, you know, around 4.55 at 212 pounds. Not the best size speed score around. And in fact, this you know, most positions were just blazing this year in the pro days, but there were actually a lot of slow running backs this year. It was weird. Just like I was, especially given how skinny and small some of these guys were, I was like, oh yeah, yeah he's gonna okay, we're gonna see all these guys are gonna be like 4.3. But even the small guys were not coming in crazy fast. I was kind of surprised there. But Javonte Williams, man, it'll be interesting to see where he actually goes, because he's the one that wasn't the slam dunk coming into the year, and now he's in this same tier for many people. There seems to be a hard drop off. But is there any point at which you drop any of these guys down? Like if they drop outside of round two, is that a huge concern for you?
I mean, if they drop outside of round two, yes. That's something that really does, like, again, I've that study that I do in terms of like opportunity that you get based on where you're drafted. I remember last year, Keyshawn Vaughn, it was the big thing that everybody, Keyshawn Vaughn's the running back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You want not Ronald Jones, not Leonard Fournette. I was like, well, he was a third round pick. I mean, like if you look at third round picks and you break down the touches and everything like that, especially with Bruce Arians, he doesn't really trust rookies right out of way. So it really made no sense. So it will definitely factor in. But running backs, it's really all about opportunity. So if they have opportunity, like even if he's a bad running back, like he's going to be worth something. So the running back position, it's such a short shelf life. You need to adjust based on situation.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll get into some more of these double counting debates and other guys that we've seen changing, and you know, their outlook might change for us depending on their draft capital on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything, which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
And we're back. And so we've talked about some of the top three names at running backs and the top three names at wide receiver, why everyone's wrong about Justin Fields. Let's get into a guy that everyone's also wrong about, but in the other direction, and that is Kadarius Toney, because he's such a terrible prospect in terms of, like, it's just crazy to me. Like, by the numbers, there's basically no argument for him making it in the NFL. And the only thing that could possibly redeem his profile is first round NFL draft capital. And right now, his expected draft position, according to Grinding the Mocks and that tool, and I think he's actually been in 869 mocks since the data collection began, he's looking like he's going around pick 30. And so if he sneaks into first round capital, it's like, what do we do? It's a terrible analytical profile. He peaked at like 22% of receiving yard market share for Florida. In his final season, you know, he's like this converted quarterback to utility player to wide receiver to maybe he's a slot in the pros. Like, what are you doing? And where do you expect Kadarius Toney to be drafted?
Kadarius Toney, I just looked it up. I have him going at 49 overall to the Cardinals, just because they're a team that uses a lot of four wide receiver sets. We haven't 20% of the time, actually, they're in four wide receiver sets. Like, there's only one other team in the NFL that's over 5%. So it's kind of ridiculous just how much they run that. Larry Fitzgerald, we haven't heard anything about him and whether or not he's going to retire. You have DeAndre Hopkins. You have AJ Green on the perimeter. I would imagine they're going to move Christian Kirk into the slot, and then they're going to have two slot receivers where Kadarius Toney. AJ Green is basically would be the number four receiver for them. Is basically how it would work.
Isn't that weird? That's so weird.
It is weird, and it sucks because I was a big AJ Green fan for a long time, but he's done. I mean, he just hit that point where it's just he wasn't the same player. But that's where I have Toney going. And to me, with someone like Kadarius Toney, I'm not big on him, just because I believe he's the type of receiver that you don't build your offense around. You basically need an offense that's going to fit him in and suit his strengths. Yeah. And, you know, you need certain play callers to do that. So if he goes to a team like Arizona that uses heavy wide receivers, I could definitely see him having some fantasy viability. If he goes to a team like the Saints, you know, Sean Payton would understand how to use a player like Kadarius Toney. If he goes to some team like the Bears, I have zero faith that Matt Nagy will understand
career
how to use him.
Because
Anthony Miller is a better football player than Kadarius Toney.
Yep.
That's what I believe. But they haven't been able to utilize him to his strength. So he's very dependent on his play caller. So he's someone that I don't think he's going to go in the first round. I know we've seen some mock drafts with him going there. I think Elijah Moore is someone that's probably going to go over him. After we heard reports, I think it was Tom Pelissero, I think. I'm not positive on that, but basically someone that said every NFL team they talked to had Elijah Moore basically just outside that big wide receiver tier as their number four receiver in this class.
Now, love that, by the way.
Elijah Moore is a football player.
Yeah.
Okay. Travis, now tell me what you think about this. I watched his film and I actually wondered while watching it, does some team kind of view him as like a third down back? Like that they could use him in like somewhat of a Chris Thompson type role, because he's a very natural ball catcher. I mean, I don't even know. He's a natural football player. He did not play as fast as his time suggested on his pro day. Like when I watched film, I didn't think he was like over the top, like rock my socks off that much speed. But when you've seen his pro day numbers, you're like, wow, whoa. I have to go back and watch.
Yeah.
And I watched, and I'm like, the kid's a football player. Like I have zero doubts about his football ability. I don't know if his numbers and I don't know if his field play matches the track play.
Sure. Well, just schematically, it's really two completely different years. If you look at his super productive 2019 season, where they basically were doing this weird quarterback by committee, like rushing offense with John Rice Plumlee and Matt Corral, and Elijah Moore was the only guy getting targeted, and he was getting targeted underneath. His ADOT was super low, and then Kiffin really just installed his system and was like, John Rice Plumlee, you're running back, go sit on the bench, and put Matt Corral in, and they started tossing the ball around and, you know, like getting in these shootouts, and it was a completely different look. Elijah Moore went from this guy who was like a bubble screen slot guy only to this do-it-all weapon who could be an outside wide receiver and was lined up out there and getting targeted as an outside wide receiver like over a quarter of the time, and being even more efficient as an outside wide receiver than he was this bubble screen underneath gadget or even just slot wide receiver. So he showed he could do everything. And so for me, he can do anything anywhere for any team. And I think that's why down the stretch, people are really coming on strong to him, because when they put the whole picture together, they see this progression and development of a player like, wow, he's way more than just a slot wide receiver. And that's why most everyone was wrong in their assessment and not understanding that. Well, no, I'll rephrase that. Anyone who didn't rank Justin Jefferson really highly last year and said he was going to struggle because he didn't face press and because he was just a slot guy, just didn't understand the whole picture. Elijah Moore has that kind of potential to just be the wide receiver one in this class and kill any expectation because of his versatility and because of his ability to learn every kind of role that you want to put him in. So yeah, he could be a scat back, he could be your slot wide receiver, and he could be your outside, Z wide receiver if you want. He can do a lot of things. And so, yeah, I think it sounds like to me we just got bored of talking about bad football players and Kadarius Toney and just moved to an actual good one and Elijah Moore. So for me, I just looping back to Toney for a sec, I think if Toney does get first round capital, for me, it won't be double counting and moving him up. It will just be because I don't think I'm there with you too. I don't think he's going to be a first round pick. I think that there's a lot of buzz. There's always that guy that there's a lot of buzz for, and then it just doesn't happen. if you put his whole resume against a, you know, maybe a dozen other guys in this class, there's no way he should be going over them as a wide receiver prospect. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he gets top 30 capital, but I'm not too excited.
If your team drafts, if you're listening to this and your team drafted Kadarius Toney, just be happy they didn't draft Tutu Atwell. Could always be that.
That's another name.
50 pounds or something?
Yeah, he was 149, I think, when they weighed in Indianapolis, actually. And so he was a little bit heavier than that, I think, at the actual Louisville pro day. But still, not exactly what you want out of a guy who has a really nice production profile. But just back to Elijah Moore real quick, because he, I think, in Devy fantasy football and dynasty guys who've been looking at these players for years, we all thought that Rondale Moore was going to be valued higher than Elijah Moore. But Elijah Moore, we're realizing by the analytics, by the film, is right up there in the elite tier, just next to all these other guys. And Rondale Moore has been slipping down just because, well, it turned out that he's actually only 5'7". So what could improve or drop either one of them down your rankings, like based on what happens with the NFL draft?
I don't know what happened with Rondale Moore. And I love how you transitioned from Elijah Moore to Rondale Moore, because I think that they're both natural football players. Like, you could look at some players that the game just comes easier to. I believe the game comes easy to both these receivers. Rondale Moore was someone that, again, when before the pro day numbers came out, he was someone that, again, it was more like, I want someone that's creative with their offense to get their hands in this guy. Like, I believe that he could be a baller in the NFL if used correctly. And it's like, you wonder if teams like Carolina could find a way to get him on their team and then use him in a way that Curtis Samuel was this past season. You think about teams like the Saints, you think about, obviously the Chiefs can make anybody work because they know what they're doing, but you just look for the opportunities like a creative play caller, because again, he's not that perimeter wide receiver that is just going to win. He's going to get 140 targets a year, and he's just going to be that possession style receiver that your quarterback can throw it up to in problematic situations. He tested off the charts athletically, but that size is what I think drove him down a lot of boards. But in reality, the dude's just he's a player, and I wound up mocking him to the Saints in the second round. I had them trading up a couple spots to get Rondale Moore, and I even said it in my draft. I said, I feel like he's going to go before this. There just hasn't been enough buzz around him. He's a football player. And that's the thing, is the tape is going to speak louder than anything this year. And it should, it always really should. And Rondale Moore's got some good tape. His hands are a little inconsistent at times, but again, if he falls into the right offense, I feel like someone's going to get a steal in the second round with Rondale Moore.
I think so too. I for a long time, many people were mocking Rondale Moore in the first round, but he's been dropping and dropping, and you know, around his expected draft position is now almost down to pick 50 at this point, which that feels like an absolute steal when you get a guy who, as a true freshman, broke out and won the Paul Hornung Award for being the most versatile football player in the entire country, and did so taking up 30%+ of the entire Purdue offense through the air. At age 18, dominating everybody, including Ohio State, essentially single-handedly knocking Ohio State out of the 2018 playoff, which was hilarious, and I still give all my Ohio State buddies a hard time for it, even 3 years later. But Rondale Moore, just a complete unicorn, because, I mean, dude, the dude's 5'7", so, like, we've almost never really seen somebody like him, somebody who broke out as early as he did and then had this weird off and on injury struggle, and then he opts out because of there's a pandemic. There's like no precedent that we have to understand this guy, other than the fact that he basically had a perfect production profile after one season. And he ran a 4.3 basically in high school, was squatting small cars as an 18-year-old, and but is also 5'7", probably from lifting all the small cars. It just kind of made him a little shorter. But seriously, it's just such a weird prospect to project. I really hope the right team trades up for him in, you know, pick 40 range, and that's he lands in a nice spot, because if he's in the wrong spot because of his stature, because of teams just might not know what to do with him, he could just disappear, and I would hate that for, you know, being basically the best thing to happen to Purdue football, my alma mater, ever. So outside of like Drew Brees. So really hope Rondale Moore actually works out. But I'm saying in the range of probably at this point in between picks 40 and even 60 for him. And so if he drops below there, I'm starting to get worried. But outside of that, I'm going to try to stay away from confirmation bias. And even if he creeps up even a little bit higher, I'm not going to move him too far, just because there's almost no historic precedent of a player like him hitting. In the same way, there's basically also no evidence of a player like him missing, because he is the wide receiver unicorn. But anyway, to round out the show here, just with this topic of changing our minds and really looking at players that we're thinking might be super reliant on their actual draft capital or really reliant on the exact landing spot, are there any players that you're specifically paying attention to that could swing up or drop down in a huge way based on draft capital or landing spot?
There are definitely a couple. Running backs are obviously opportunity driven, but wide receivers specifically, I think someone like Terrace Marshall is someone I'm watching where he lands, because I believe someone can draft him as kind of like that number three, number four wide receiver and kind of see if he's that number one, or they draft him to be that number one, number two receiver, where it's like they're looking in a draft class that has limited big body wide receivers. I do anticipate him going early in the second round, even with those concerns. I think that some teams may leak those concerns to say, oh, he popped up on the medical red flag, hoping he's going to fall to them. If he's drafted in the second round, Terrace Marshall's going to get opportunity. If he falls into the third round because of those injury concerns, I think that I'm going to lower him down my draft boards. Someone that can move up a ton, there's actually two players. Dwayne Eskridge, love him, out of Western Michigan. I would love to see him go at like the end of the second round of the Packers. I mean, I believe he'd be an awesome complement to Davante Adams in terms of what the Packers can do with him. He's someone that can move a lot. And one player that is like my sleeper in this class that I'm going to go to bat for him, Cade Johnson, out of South Dakota State. I love that little
Jackrabbits.
Like he grinds, man. He's out there. He works. He doesn't have all the physical tools that some of these wide receivers do, but he will outwork you. And it's like wide receivers like that I could deal with. And he reminds me a little bit of Tyler Lockett. Doesn't have the top end speed that Lockett does, but he can get open. And it's like if the right NFL team like just takes a shot on him, if he goes on day two, I'm going to be stoked. I'm going to be celebrating 4K Johnson. Whereas if he falls to day three, it's more like, all right, this dude's going to have to overcome a lot of stuff like he has throughout his career, basically being a smaller receiver. But I dig him a lot. K Johnson, he's my number 10 wide receiver in this class. So
nice.
Glad you mentioned him more than most.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned those two specifically, Eskridge and Cade Johnson, because the competition questions are real, right? Because Dwayne Eskridge basically just played a bunch of MAC teams that are full of really bad football players. Cade Johnson didn't even play Division I football. He was playing for the South Dakota State Jackrabbits and broke out in a huge way pretty early on. And if you look at his production profile from any standpoint, like he was taking up basically half the receiving offense 3 years ago. For South Dakota State. And so his adjusted production index, which is a metric that I built out for RotoViz, is 98th percentile among drafted NFL wide receivers. Now, obviously, the lower competition, those guys with that kind of profile, they're not as much of a slam dunk for day two capital. But that kind of number, typically, even for G5 schools, sees day two capital. So if he sneaks in there, that's going to be somebody who's rising way up draft boards. That's definitely a name I'm looking at. I just haven't talked about it as much because, frankly, I haven't heard a whole lot of people talk about him throughout this process outside of, last fall and a couple of Debbie discussions. Hey, don't forget Cade Johnson. But Dwayne Eskridge, he's an interesting guy because he was, that converted. He was a defensive back for part of his career, had almost broke out like 2 or 3 years ago, but then went back to defensive back. And then this final year in Western Michigan puts together the most efficient passing season in modern football history, which is just hilarious because it was obviously a small sample, only 6 games. And a lot of the way he's winning, it's on the same exact RPO slant play, but still he's intriguing because of that speed. So if he gets capital, he's another name to watch. I'm not super high on him myself just because I see him being a little bit more limited, but he's definitely a name to watch that I would adjust if the NFL said, hey, we believe in that guy. But Terrace Marshall, glad you mentioned him because I've seen him as high as like wide receiver 2 for some people. And as low as like wide receiver 10 for some people. And, some people have health questions with him. But I see a guy who just scores touchdowns like crazy. Like he was leading the entirety of college football in 2019 in touchdown percentage, playing on a bum ankle. Like almost one out of every 3 receptions for him was a touchdown. He was almost on that same exact pace before he opted out last fall as well. And so Terrace Marshall, he needs a quarterback that trusts him to score. But if he has that ability to find the end zone in a way that no one else does in this class. He has a very unique resume in that regard. So that's somebody I'm definitely watching too. But I think he's probably going to be a round two guy. If he drops below that, I have concerns. If he's around one guy, that says a lot about his opportunity. Oh, yeah. And I will be adjusting just ever so slightly. A couple other guys I am paying attention to just because they're not exactly, I guess, how you draw a wide receiver up perfectly. You know, like Anthony Schwartz, he's an Olympic sprinter. Like he was actually slated to participate in the Tokyo Olympics. Like he would be the men's 4x1 like sprinting team. So when I saw him clock a 4.26 40 at his pro day, I was like, man, that's actually kind of slow. Like that's, he's got that kind of crazy speed. So if he actually gets day two capital, he's somebody I'm definitely intrigued by. Tutu Atwell, he's hilarious because he's 150 pounds. We mentioned him earlier, but he's got like a 91st percentile adjusted production index. He's got a decent breakout age. Analytically, he looks nice except for his weight. So if a team drafts him inside day two, at this point, I would be surprised by that. But he's been mocked inside round one, even as like what recently is what, a month and a half ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was going 28 in a lot of different mocks. People were starting putting him there, and people started talking about the Bears. And I'm like, stop it. Kadarius Toney was another one of those guys. Like, and that's the thing. I just pull up my notes on Tutu Atwell, and it's, to be fair, my critique at the beginning of the show, it was more like, be happy. Don't be happy if your team drafts him in the first round. Like, if you get Tutu Atwell in like the third or fourth round, I'm not opposed to that. It's like, okay, cool. I am really worried about his size. Like, he's like legit dangerously small. Yeah. Like Devontae Smith, I'm not worried about. Like, he's a football player. Like, through and through, I would take my chances on him. But Tutu Atwell, no. But I did want to throw in real quick before I forget. So Dwayne Eskridge and Cade Johnson, mm-hmm. part of the reason, like, so the Senior Bowl is like a big thing for a lot of people. Like, yeah, they go down there and then they do all that stuff. I wanted to watch those two in particular. Like, so when they went to the Senior Bowl, it was just like Cade Johnson. I've watched his games, obviously, and the kid balled out. But you watch the Senior Bowl footage from Cade Johnson, and you're just like, dude, he just made these guys look stupid, like legit dumb. And these are players that are coming into the NFL that are going to be drafted in day two. And it's like, he made them look terrible. Like, he outworked everyone there. And I think that he won over a lot of coaches because that was really the only chance they had to see against legit competition, where it was like, okay, this kid's coming in. He doesn't play at D1 school. We just need to see him in person. And I think he turned a lot of eyes his way. And again, I don't know if he's going to earn his way into day two. I hope he does, because again, that's going to get him that opportunity that we seek out. But if he goes in the fourth round, it's like, okay. But again, once you start going that fifth, sixth, seventh round, that's when things get tougher and tougher. And you're more of like just a depth chart piece at that point.
Exactly. Well, and a couple more running backs before we sign off here, but Kenneth Gainwell and Chuba Hubbard, their expected draft position, according to the same tool I alluded to earlier, Kenneth Gainwell's going around pick 90, Chuba Hubbard around pick 140. So are you going to, if they're drafted much higher than those marks or much lower than those marks, are you going to change how you feel about either one of those players?
Gainwell is certainly someone I'm willing to move up if he lands in the right spot. We could talk about teams that utilize their running backs in the passing game. I think that the Falcons are an interesting team for him to go to. You have Arthur Smith there, and I know that he's like the power back, and it's like Mike Davis is there, but I think Gainwell would be an excellent complement to him. And if given the opportunity, Gainwell can carry the ball more than I think people think he does. I think that people are looking at him as the best receiving back in this class, which he is. It's just a matter of, can he get it into an offense where he's going to get opportunity in the ground. Like, all I'm looking for is like 12 carries a game. If I can get 12 carries a game, he's going to be utilized in the passing game no matter what. You don't draft him and not use him in the passing game, unless maybe you're Matt Nagy. And then Chuba Hubbard, I'm not big on Hubbard. I know we disagreed about this on the pod we had you on with. He was someone that I was excited to watch when I sat down to watch the film in this class, because I watched him last year because he was supposed to come out last year.
Yeah. And then after 2,000 yards. Back. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was obviously a bad decision. But like watching him in 2020, it I don't know. I didn't get it at all with him. So, I mean, some people are talking about him potentially going undrafted. I don't think that's going to happen. But even if he falls to the fourth or fifth round, running backs just, they almost never get an opportunity. You just need to take a look at depth charts. You know, like, is there a team like the 49ers? Like, for example, Wayne Gallman just signed with the 49ers. I know that Kyle Shanahan is a guy that's going to play all his running backs, and Wayne Gallman might have an opportunity to shine. That's a team that he can go to where it's like he might get a chance. Whereas if you go to a team like the Panthers and you're drafted in the sixth round, it's like you're not going to get a chance unless Christian McCaffrey's hurt. And they may even add another back because they only use sixth round capital on you. So all that stuff does matter, particularly with the running backs. Running backs, you need to, no matter who you like, who you don't like, you need to go back and reevaluate after the draft class has kind of taken place, because if they fall outside the first two rounds, it's like every round gets really bad. And again, once you get to like the fifth round,
it's really bad. It's essentially really the same as like a sixth or seventh round type player. Yeah. So yeah, if he's fifth round or later, especially, even though I liked him, especially after his 2,000 yard season, you know, really hurt him playing with bad quarterback play, the worst version of an Oklahoma State offensive line that we've seen in the last few years, and playing through a high ankle sprain, just all together. It was just a perfect storm of everything that he was fighting through. And it was such an important year for him to prove that, hey, I'm not just a one-year wonder. I am still this explosive playmaker. So I'm going to be watching his capital at the running back position maybe more closely than anyone else in this draft in this draft class and his landing spot, because he's a guy who, if you give him a runway, if it's a good offensive line situation, he's already shown he is going to absolutely ball. So I think he could kill some expectations that a lot of people have. But if he does not get that capital, that's going to be a huge, huge nope.
Yeah. If he goes day two, I'll be with you. Like, if he goes day two, that means that the team that drafted him went and watched 2019 and said, we know what this running back can do. Pay no attention to 2020. It was a weird year for everybody. Absolutely. Let's just look at it and basically believe in what you saw in 2019. And again, if you get him in third round there, you still have decent capital. But again, falling into day three is a big downgrade.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the truth for running back just in general. Every single year we see it time and time again mattering in big ways at the running back position. But before we sign off, you know, I mean, a lot of our listeners know who you are and appreciate your work and all you do at Fantasy Pros, all you've done in past years, even for Pro Football Focus. And you know, I were just talking just yesterday about, you know, how you came to be where you are now. And so some of the listeners that may be aspiring to a career in football or fantasy football or something like that, I know, I mean, my first podcast was called Dynasty Life, and it was basically telling the stories of people in the industry and how they got into it, where they made it, how they made it. And I, for some reason, didn't actually have you on as a guest in that process. So I'd love for you to just be able to share a little bit of how you got to where you are with Fantasy Pros.
No, yeah, it's a pretty neat story. It's definitely unconventional in the fact that it was a long time, because a lot of people they kind of found me once I got to Fantasy Pros, and it was like, oh, it's cool you do this for a living. And what happened is like they missed a lot of what happened behind the scenes. And like it was all the way back in 2000 and geez, what year was it now? I think it was 2009 or 2010. I had back surgery and I was laid up. So I had a fusion on my back, and basically they told me it was going to be a year recovery because it was bad. And so I was going through therapy and all this stuff. And I was sitting there on the couch the one day, and I was just basically writing about fantasy football players because it's just what I did, because I'm a nerd. I mean, hey. I'm the type of guy that kept stats in Madden, and I cared about those stats.
Same.
So I was doing that on the couch, and my wife basically just she looked at me one day, and she's like, what are you doing with all that football stuff? And I was like, nothing. Why? And she's like, why don't you start a website? I was like, who the hell wants to read what I have to say? And she's like, I think you might be surprised. Like, because she had seen me talk with my friends and stuff about football, and I was definitely passionate about it. So basically she just said, well, if you had a website, what would you call it? And I was like, I don't know, tagsfantasyfootball.com. And about 10 minutes later, she handed me her laptop and said that she had bought the domain and that I was going to start a website. And so I didn't even know what Twitter was at that point. It was 2011. I just remembered when I started my Twitter account.
Early Twitter. Right then.
So it was 2011, and we started the Twitter account. I didn't even know what Twitter was at that point. And she's like, this is a way for you to gain followers and this and that. So I'm learning all about this stuff because I knew nothing. And as soon as I got the first couple emails asking for advice, it was like, okay, cool. And I ran my own website for 3 years without making a dime. And in fact, for those content creators out there, you know this, if you've ever done your own site, it actually costs you money to do what you're doing. So not only are you sacrificing time with your family and your friends, but you're paying to have the website up, you're paying for the domain, you're paying for that stuff. And which is cool. I enjoyed doing it. So that's why I kept doing it. And eventually it got to the point where, if I can go back for a minute, when I first started that website, I emailed the owner of Fantasy Pros. They had just started like a year or two prior to that.
Yeah, that was still brand new then. Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I want to be a part of your ranking competition. Can I get in? And I was trying to find ways to get my name out there, right?
Yeah.
And I think this was actually in 2012. And he emailed me back and said, oh, hey, you know, we're looking for experienced writers that have had, you know, a site or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, you know, keep me in mind if you ever need anything. I'd love to be a part of it. He emailed me back like 2 days later. And it was Dave, the owner. And he said, hey, I went and looked at your website and it's really in depth. Like you wrote a lot on these players. We'd like to have you in the competition and yada, yada. So I joined in 2013, the ranking competition. And I started to build a name for myself doing well in the ranking competition. And then it was in 2015, I got offered a part-time job with PFF, which I worked for for a year. Then they offered me a full-time year, like a full-time position.
Yeah.
There's a long story. That there's happened. So yeah. Much stuff that goes on in between here that Travis and I talked about yesterday. yeah. But basically, you know, offered me a full-time job the next year, but it was just in season. I had a contract until it was February and or March. And Fantasy Bros called me in February and said, hey, you know, we're looking to bring on someone to run our content section. Like, because they didn't have really a content side at that point.
Yeah, lots of ranks and lots of kind of shorter stories, yeah. But like not like the intense thing that it is today. You've built it into.
Yeah, we try. I mean, I try. I try and put up basically the idea that behind the content is that, you know, it's. I'm finally given the time to do what I always wanted to do. And what I want to do is basically take the notions that people have about things and like, you know, oh, wide receiver declines at 28 years old. And I'm like, well, why are we accepting this as a fact? Like, so I'm actually given the time to research that and figure things out. And so basically if there's ever a question that comes across that people have, and it's something that I'd want answered myself, it's like, that's what I love to do, to yeah. find, to like, you know, but whether it confirm things, deny things, whatever. But, I don't know. It's a crazy world we're in. And I've now been with Fantasy Pros. This is my fifth season full time with them. So I've been full time in the industry now. This is my sixth season. So it's kind of crazy where time has gone, but I'm happy to be here doing it.
Yeah. That's crazy. That it was that long ago. I didn't even, when we were talking about this just yesterday, I was like, wow, that's already been that long ago. But I remember when you like got on with Fantasy Pros and was like, hey, tags. Oh, it's sweet. So I was like, man, that's so crazy. I was kind of laughing at myself yesterday. Like we were having lunch and I ordered a drink and the lady didn't card me. And I just said, oh, well, I guess I'm old now. Like
that happened to me a long time ago.
Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, time flies, man. Well, yeah, man, I appreciate your time just coming on draft week, talking through these rookies, telling part of your story. And I'm sure our listeners really appreciate that too. Understanding how you got here, because a lot of people want to do that too. And so you can find Mike at Mike Taglier NFL on Twitter. And Mike, I know you just got your mock draft all done. It's up on fantasypros.com. Is there anything else that you want to kind of pump that's going to be coming out that you're super excited about with Fantasy Pros?
Oh man, I just can't wait for this draft to happen because yeah. I'm able to go through and update the depth charts and actually create my first set of projections for the year. I do an NFL draft grades article, so that'll come out Monday after the draft is done, giving every team a grade. And it's not based on my opinion solely. It's based on, did they fill team needs? Did they take value when it was presented? Did they trade back yeah. when they should have? Did they take a player, you know, and with pick number 3 that they could have gotten at pick number 12? All those things I take into consideration. But yeah, we're doing actually a live stream for the NFL draft. So it's on youtube.com/fantasypros. We're doing last year we had I think 80,000 viewers for the first night, and basically we just sit there with you guys, watch the draft as like a second screen experience where nice. We talk about every pick from a team building standpoint, we talk about it from a fantasy standpoint, and we don't get any commercial breaks, so I'm gonna have to pee probably for the final 2 hours of it, and I'll hold it in for you.
Yeah, well that sounds like a blast, man. I might have to tune in myself amid doing other things that evening as well, but really appreciate you joining in, Mike, and talking some ball again. And listeners, please do check out all things Fantasy Pros and all things RotoViz. We're still putting out a bunch of rookie content right now. I just dropped the brand new version of my adjusted production index, looking at over 40 wide receivers in this class and their production profiles from a few different angles. Please leave a rate and review for this show. It helps a lot. But man, I just can't believe it's already the NFL draft. It's finally here. And I hope everyone, all you guys, enjoy it. And as always, if you have any questions on anything we talked about on the show today, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at @FF_TravisM. And I look forward to you joining me soon for many more episodes of the College Decanton Podcast.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.